Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome once again to another edition of Wrestle Chat Radio. Marcus King coming to you live from the SBTV studios right here in New York. And for the next 2 hours, we will be discussing the world of professional wrestling, primarily Survivor Series War Games that happened last night at 347-215-8486. 347-215-8486, if you'd like to get in on our conversation. Of course, as always, you can hit us up in the chat room, and we'll take your questions, your comments, and your opinions there as well. Before we do get started dissecting the Survivor Series War Games, and we're going to really dissect it, we're going to do a deep dive into this because I think it's worthy of it. I do have a little bit of breaking news, possible breaking news, coming from a pretty good source about Sasha Banks. And what I'm hearing about Sasha Banks is that she's open to a return to professional wrestling. She hasn't said necessarily with the WWE, but she's open to a return to professional wrestling, but apparently not until possibly after the new year, that she has a lot of commitments and things on the table that requires her to be certain places or whatever, and she's not really interested in actually committing herself to a schedule until after the first of the year. So you won't be seeing Sasha Banks, apparently, in a wrestling ring till after the first of the year. Anyway, folks, let's start out from the very, very beginning. We had the War Games women's match. Now, I got to tell you that I was a little bit confused about the whole entire event because for some strange reason, I thought that they were going to mix War Games and Survivor Series together, meaning that the match didn't start until all of the people got in the ring, but then everyone had to be eliminated. I thought that's the way it was going to go. I had no idea it was just first pinfall or submission. I had no idea that was going to be the case. I thought it was a mixture of the two matches, so it really shocked me when they said, oh, no, the first pinfall, that's it. And that made things a lot different for me. Because if you didn't have to see individual eliminations, it's much easier to call these matches. But anyway, Bianca Belair starts out for her team. And Dakota Kai starts out. Now, Dakota Kai, that's really not a surprise because she's been in several of these War Games matches. And, you know, I've heard people say online today, as I'm looking through the internet, seeing what the fans thought of this event, there's a lot of people saying, well, this match was not that great. This match was a botch fest. I don't know what match you were watching. I have no idea what match you were watching. I didn't see any major botches. I've seen some later that we'll talk about in other matches. I didn't see any major botches in this match. What I did see that I can comment on that I didn't like is I understand that you wanted to have at least one person, possibly Nikki Cross, look under the ring and find some objects to throw in. But everyone thereafter did that. And by the time they got to the ring, didn't get in the ring, looked around for things that they obviously had no idea where they actually were because some of them were really surprised. They're like, oh, it's not on this side. It's not over here. Where did they put that stuff I'm supposed to pull out? Their 3 minutes was almost up, which is kind of aggravating, and that the rule should be you have 30 seconds to get into that ring. Past that, you know, you're eliminated from War Games. Because otherwise, what's to stop you from just sitting outside, waiting until your teammate comes? Wouldn't that be the logical choice if you're outnumbered? If you're outnumbered, why wouldn't you just walk around ringside pretending to look for things underneath the ring until you say, okay, well, now things are going to get evened up? Doesn't make a lot of sense. But overall, I thought this match was fantastic. We clearly saw the athletic ability of Bianca Belair, who was as good as she ever was. Io Sky was probably the best I've ever seen her perform in WWE, not in NXT, but in WWE. Probably the best performance Io Sky has given. Nikki Cross did the, no pun intended, flying crossbody, which was awesome. There was a lot of call high spots in this match and a lot of clever spots in this match, and it kept me very entertained through the whole thing. Now, the choice of people coming in last, we kind of knew. We kind of knew who'd come in last. We knew Becky Lynch would be last, and we presumed that it would probably be Rhea Ripley coming in last, and we're correct. If anything bothered me about this match, and not much did, let full disclosure, I was multitasking while I'm watching this match. And for the first minute or three, four minutes of this match, I'd be doing something, look back up, listening to it, look back up, listening to it, look back up. The 5 minutes had not passed yet. The third person had not gotten into the ring when I put what I was doing away. And I watched the rest of this match start to finish with no interruption. And that's the highest compliment I can pay it. It kept me very well entertained. It kept me guessing. And there were several times when I thought to myself, I don't know which way this is going to go. This could go a number of ways. Now, if there's anything that bothered me about this match other than the time wasting, finding the weapons, and the fact that Mia Yim apparently cannot get weapons into the ring. Mia Yim was having a hard, hard time getting her weapons in the ring. It was ridiculous. Was the fact that the end of this match, I don't know how you throw Rhea Ripley to the wolves as the one that gets pinned. You have built so much heat up on Rhea Ripley that I cannot for the life of me figure out why she was the one chosen to lose this match. The logical person chosen to lose this match would have been Bayley, who was responsible for putting Becky Lynch out. So it would have been, eye for an eye, right? That's what I thought was probably going to happen. I don't know why they chose Rhea Ripley. That would have been the last person. Because now they're talking about, maybe Rhea Ripley will challenge Bianca Belair. We've already seen Rhea Ripley pinned. The thunder's been taken away. I don't know why you did that. That was extremely frustrating to me. Extremely frustrating. When you had every single other person in that ring was a better choice. Dakota Kai, does it hurt her to take a pin? Io Sky, does it hurt her to take a pin? Nikki Cross, how many times she been pinned? Does it hurt her to take a pin? Even Bayley, eye for an eye if Becky Lynch comes back and pins Bayley during War Games, right? So what rocket scientist thought it was a great idea for Rhea Ripley to be the one to take the pinfall and to lose a lot of that heat that people were saying can't wait to see her finally get what's coming to her? Well, you just did. Makes no sense to me. This is someone you had to play along with for a while, especially if she's got championship aspirations, that she's not getting pinned. And you chose her above everyone else, including Io Sky and Dakota Kai. For the life of me, Mike, I do not get why that choice was made.
I don't get it either, but here's the deal. This match played into the next match because both of those two women that might have been out there weren't. Right, and another thing, Rhea Ripley sold the hell out of the green mist.
I mean,
she was, after she got sprayed, she was gone. She wasn't in the match for a good 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 5-6 minutes. I mean, that's a true professional right there.
She did a great job. I just don't understand why she's the one to take the pinfall. I mean, if I'm the powers that be, I say, look, we got something really hot going here with Rhea Ripley. So as long as she's catching fire and getting a lot of heat, keep her away from being the one pinned. Dakota Kai has no heat at all. What's the difference if she gets pinned? And if you want to say, well, we want somebody really good for Becky Lynch to finish off on, Bailey's the person. She's the one who caused the injury to begin with. You know, kayfabe-wise, anyway. So that would have made more sense. And no big deal if Becky Lynch comes back and pins Bailey. It's quite obvious Bailey was shocked that Becky Lynch was coming back. She didn't want any part of her, you know, and so she gets pinned. I was really flabbergasted when it was Rhea Ripley. I was waiting for Rhea Ripley to kick out because I'm like, well, they won't let Rhea Ripley take the pin. When she didn't kick out, I'm like, are you kidding? That's not good. That's not good at all. So I thought that that choice was bad. As far as the match itself, I thought the match itself was entertaining as hell. Yes, some people stumbled with getting the weapons in the ring. Yeah, there was some, you know, stalling outside the ring. But I didn't see any major botches. I saw Io Sky do the top of the cage, which was awesome. I saw Nikki Cross do that crossbody perfectly. Didn't wait for people to say, okay, one, two, three, jump. She just jumped. And what I saw there is, yeah, you know, you got two rings and that little spot in between, and there's a lot of people in there and a lot of weapons in there, and you got to be, you know, a little careful of what you're doing. But for that sort of a match, I thought it was an excellent match. It kept my attention start to finish. Asuka looked fantastic in it. The only person that looked sluggish in this match was Alexa Bliss, and I don't know if that was intentional. When she first got in, she cleaned house a little bit. But then after that, she was real sort of sluggish. And even at the end, when they were going, you know, posing, she was the last person to come into the group. Thought to myself, is this going to be something because something's going to happen with the Bray Wyatt situation down the road and they're still teasing it? Or is she hurt? Or is she not feeling well? Or is there some kind of real legit bad blood there, but she just didn't seem like herself. I don't know if you noticed that, Todd, but last night, to me anyway, Alexa Bliss seemed a little sluggish.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, I noticed that too when she was in women's War Games match. She didn't look right to me, and like you said, she kind of looked like she was hurt, sick, or not too happy. One of those three things. And like you said, it's something didn't seem right with her last night.
Yeah, and I don't know whether it's intentional. It could be, or it could be one of those other things we said. Now, Tom, I know you didn't like the match as much as I did, but I really thought, you got to remember, I went into this saying the following. I don't really care for Dakota Kai. I don't really care for Io Sky that much. I like Asuka, but she's been downcycled a lot. I like Bianca Belair. I like Alexa Bliss. Bailey's been so-so. Nikki Cross is always great, but who knows what she's going to do with that character. And Rhea Ripley was going to be the dominant one. So I said, well, there's going to be some interesting back and forths, but it's probably not going to be too tremendous. It's not going to keep my attention for 20-some-odd minutes that it was, but it did. Mia Yim, I'm not sold on. But, man, I thought they had some great moves. I really did. I thought there was a lot of energy put into the match. I thought that most of them did an excellent job in there. And there were some things in there that I really didn't think would happen during the match that did. So I know you didn't like it as well as I did, but I thought this was, to be honest with you, I think this was a better match than the men's War Game match.
Well, I'll be honest with you. When I did mention this online pre-show here that it was a botch fest. I should have kind of specified because what I meant by that, I'm not taking away anything from like the energy of the match, and I thought they all did a good job. But here's what aggravated me and kind of, I don't know, maybe I'm thinking too much into it. What kind of really turned me off was that every single one of them went under the ring looking for stuff. It's like, come on, how much stuff are you going to throw in the ring? And how many times did they use it? They just throw can lids in the ring and used it once. There was four of them. Why weren't they utilized? Why weren't the garbage can utilized? Except for once where she put it over her head and did a leg drop. That was kind of cool. But they didn't.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on the weaponry. I mean, I thought leave it to one girl and maybe two. if you wanted to have someone put weapons in the ring, say, okay, well, look, we're going to leave it to one person from each team is going to do that. The person from Bayley's team should probably have been Nikki Cross, who does a much better job playing a crazy person than she did a superhero or any of the other things. And the one from Bianca Belair's team probably should have been Mia Yim. Someone has to tell Mia Yim how to get a weapon in the ring. She literally is trying to force it through the door, and she can't get it through the door. But yeah, you're right. There was too much of that. It lost its effectiveness after the first two. And throwing three or four things in when you only need one, I know you're trying to get some to your teammates, I get that, but I think technically this was a better match than the men's match. It was not a better match as far as storytelling. We'll get to that. But just from a match standpoint, I thought everyone had their good moments. I didn't expect Nikki Cross to jump off the top of the cage. I didn't expect Io Sky to do a moonsault off the top of the cage. I didn't expect Becky Lynch to go through the leg drop through the table. Especially after coming back from injury and stuff. I didn't expect any of that. Asuka doing the green mist was great. As Mike said, the selling of it was fantastic by Rhea Ripley. Rhea did a fantastic job in there. I think everybody had their moments, with the exception of maybe Alexa Bliss and Dakota Kai didn't have big moments, but everybody else sort of did. And I think it fleshed out their characters a little bit better. And there is no question, no question. Did you hear the fan reaction when it was only Asuka and Io Sky facing off against each other? These fans clearly want to see this match. Which, give them credit. Give the Boston fans credit. It's not just because, oh, they're both Asian women wrestlers. No, no, they know the history. They know the history between these two. They want to see this match. And the WWE would be stupid if they didn't attempt to promote this match in the very, very near future. There was an audible roar from the crowd when those two first squared off. And you can see they have a good knowledge of each other. They may not have worked against each other much, but they certainly know each other really well, and they know each other's moves. And the quickness in which they did that series of moves and did the counter move to the counter move and stuff like that was really good. I could see this match being an extremely entertaining 15, 20-minute match, Mike.
I could see that, too. And I could also see a series of matches between these two people. Another audible roar was when Nikki Cross and Alexa Bliss got together. That was the whole sequence with the handcuffs and that, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, which, hey, her Nikki Cross having handcuffs, crazy person, right? Crazy person having handcuffs. It fits with her character. Now, granted, you didn't expect, you expected kind of what they were talking about when I guess it was Corey Graves, or they're going to handcuff her either to the cage or to the ropes, right? Well, what you didn't expect is Alexa Bliss not to allow that to happen and actually put the handcuffs, the other handcuff, on Nikki Cross.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that was their, quote-unquote, that was their spot in the match. So I'm again, if you're going to have these matches, and we've discussed this on this show many times when it comes to battle royals, when it comes to Survivor Series style matches, or when it just comes to, four on four or triple threat, whatever it happens to be, we said, as long as you're going to have these matches with multiple people, you may as well set up feuds while you're in there. Rather than to just say, well, we're just going to go in there and fight, and then this person's going to win, and that's it. You got them all in there. You may as well begin the branches on the tree of there's going to be feuds between these people. And I think we saw some of that last night. That's why I was flabbergasted when Rhea Ripley lost, because I said, we're going to see Rhea Ripley and Bianca Belair. We're going to see something between those two where, like, Rhea Ripley clearly seems to be the stronger, but then Bianca Belair is going to do something that the announcers are going to be like, can you believe the power of her? And Rhea Ripley was going to be shocked too and say, holy shit, you know, I didn't think she was that powerful. And we're setting this up. That's what I really thought. This is going to be your next contender for Bianca Belair, and you're going to set it up in War Games. Thought, well, that's a no-brainer. It's going to be Bayley. That's easy. She's the leader of this whole situation, so of course it would be her. Then I figured, well, obviously you're going to have Alexa Bliss and Nikki. That makes perfect sense. You're going to have Asuka and Io Sky. That makes perfect sense. I realize Mia Yim is trying to have the feud with Rhea Ripley, but I thought Mia Yim's feud with Rhea Ripley would probably end up being the precursor to Bianca Belair. And then you let Becky Lynch come in and just pin Rhea Ripley. Clean. If you had told me going into War Games, the person who's going to lose for Damage Control's team is going to be Rhea Ripley, I would have said, who the hell booked that? That's not true. That's not going to happen. Not when you got me. Not when you've got Io Sky in there and Dakota Kai and Nikki Cross. Any one of those could take the pinfall and not hurt them at all. Why would you pick Rhea Ripley, who you obviously have big plans for, take that pinfall and take some of that heat off of her? Because that's what ends up happening. That would be like if Walter was the guy who got pinned in the six-man tag team match. And you're like, okay, well, then, you know, that's not good. We've already seen Walter defeated now. You would never do that because you'd say, well, no, we're saving it for something special. Well, that's what you should have done with Rhea Ripley. Well, that's flabbergasting, Tom. I don't understand the logic behind Rhea Ripley taking this pinfall.
I thought it was kind of silly. I mean, you could say, to play devil's advocate, Marcus, you could say she got hit with the mist. She was kind of disoriented. She is kind of like the odd man out of the group. They only just recruited her. She's not in Damage Control, where Nikki Cross right. kind of, you know, clearly is. And she's got other, you know, she's got other fish to fry. So I guess you could look at it that way, but it was kind of dumb. Like, Io Sky and Dakota Kai could have taken the pin, and Nikki Cross could have, too, because they've been pinned a zillion times, and it wouldn't have hurt Rhea Ripley. Now that you've commented on this before, because we're all waiting for Rhea Ripley to get her ass handed to her, well, now she did, so now if she does again, you know, most fans are going to be like, eh.
No, you're absolutely right. You took that moment away. That's what I'm trying to explain to you. To fans, I understand your logic, and I agree with your logic that she's the odd man out, so it still has Damage Control looking like they're strong. But Damage Control looking strong is not as important as Rhea Ripley looking strong if you have plans for Rhea Ripley. Now, if you have no plans for Rhea Ripley, if you say, no, she's not going for the title, she's just going to hang around with the Judgment Day and Dominic, okay. But clearly, that's not what you're doing. Clearly, she's the most over female heel. So if you have the most over female heel and the one that's getting the most heat, why are you taking the heat off her? To try to make Becky Lynch look like, well, look, Becky Lynch came in and cleaned her clock. And I understand she took the mist and all that stuff, but it doesn't matter. In my world, if I'm the booker, I'm saying until Rhea Ripley challenges for that title, ain't nobody pinning her. Nobody. I don't care what you hit her with. She's kicking out at least until she goes for that title shot, because that's the person you want. If she is going to take the pinfall, that's the person you want to do it, the champion. It's almost like they said, well, let's get your loss out of the way so it's no big deal. Well, it is a big deal now, because now all the fans that were anxiously awaiting Rhea Ripley suffering her first loss after her Judgment Day hook up. Well, you just saw it. You just saw it. And it was anticlimactic because it didn't mean much. Becky Lynch has no heat with Rhea Ripley. So it didn't make a lot of sense to me, Mike, and I think in the long run this is going to hurt them because I think it's going to take a little bit of the heat off Rhea Ripley.
Absolutely, and correct me if I'm wrong, weren't there two people on that table?
Yes.
Dakota Kai. So she could have chosen Dakota Kai. Becky Lynch could have, you know.
I think Dakota was already put through a table, and then they didn't do it, though. I don't think they were both on the table together. Dakota Kai was on a separate table. She wasn't on the one that Becky Lynch went through. She was on one, and somebody else put her through or something. But they didn't go for the pin. That's the problem. Truthfully, I think that hurt the match for me. Not that it wasn't a good match. I thought it was a very, very good match. But I'm scratching my head at the ending because I'm saying, man, this was your moment. This was your moment to say, look, here's the story of the match. Becky Lynch wants her hands on Bayley badly. She's the one she's targeting. Rhea Ripley wants to prove I'm the number one contender, and she's manhandling Bianca Belair like no one has ever done. So the announcers can say, you know, we always said Bianca Belair is the strongest or whatever, but clearly she's not. Clearly, she is not stronger than Rhea Ripley. Clearly, Rhea Ripley is manhandling Bianca Belair. And I don't think Bianca Belair's ever gotten to the ring with anyone who could do that before. She is literally outpowering Bianca Belair at every turn. And then toward the end of the match, if Bianca Belair does something that makes it look like she's equal to that power, then the announcers could say, oh, my God, can you believe that? Rhea Ripley can look shocked like, what the hell? You know, but they're not pinned. That way we have the anticipation of, man, when these two fight, this is going to be some contest. Now you have Becky Lynch return from an injury and pin her. Holy crap, was that a bad decision. I'm sorry. That was just a terrible decision, and no one will convince me otherwise. Terrible decision. Absolutely terrible. Now, if you wanted to do something by which Rhea Ripley was sabotaged by, like, say, Nikki Cross, who would have a reason to sabotage her and say, well, Nikki Cross just plain crazy. Look what she did to her own teammate, and then she got rolled up for a quick three. It's still bad, but it's not as bad. This was bad. It takes away a lot of Rhea's heat and the anticipation of finally her getting pinned. And again, if you're going to say that's not true, think to yourself, you want to see Gunther take the pinfall in a six-man match with Imperium against, say, the Brawling Brutes? Is it going to be Gunther who gets that pinfall? No, it won't be. Why? Just ask yourself why. Will Roman Reigns take the loss? No, why? Ask yourself why. Anyway, we didn't talk about it, but I do want to say this. The opening to War Games was awesome. And I'm sorry, but if you're listening to this show and you do not think that having Ozzy Osbourne open up that show, even if it is lip-singing to his old track, that montage with Ozzy Osbourne was fucking awesome. I literally, my jaw dropped. I'm like, wait a minute, that's really Ozzy? He's really doing this? You know, it's not old Ozzy. You can see he's much older. So this is new. They've just done this. Amazing. A lot of fun. It fit like a hand in a glove. Whoever was responsible for that montage, it might be one of my favorite montages of all time. Of all time. It was just as cool as hell. And I know tastes vary. But my God, I'm so glad that finally we get a theme song that's not rap or that's not some kind of a half pop funky, whatever the hell it is. It's about time we had a rock song, even if you had to go back to Black Sabbath to do it. And having War Pigs fits it so, it's just so perfect. So I thought this was one of the best montages, Todd, I've seen them do in a long time.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, last time we saw like a montage of that of a heavy metal song or a hard rock song was back in 1998 SummerSlam with AC/DC Highway to Hell montage.
Right, right, yeah. Yeah, and this one was, I thought this one was even better. I mean, there was just, it was done perfectly, Tom. I think this was one of the best openings I've seen for a premium live event in a very long time.
I have to agree with you. I might be a little partial because I'm a big fan of Ozzy and Black Sabbath, but I think whoever was responsible for doing that montage, he's a keeper. Please do not get rid of him and have him do more, please. I know it was Ozzy now, and it wasn't like, you know, he's lip syncing. That's fine. I don't care about that. What I care about how great. Is it that they chose a song for War Games like War Pigs? It fits the whole like premise of the name of the premium live event. And the crowd, as soon as that was done, the crowd was on their feet. And it was amazing. It was amazing. And that was a good
thing. You know, the funny thing was at the press conference later, which we'll talk about later on in the show, Triple H said, they were going to get Ozzy do it live. It was going to start out with Ozzy Osbourne literally doing War Pigs live, but he said schedules conflicted. They couldn't quite get it done. That would have been a moment. That would have been a moment of all moments. But I got news for you. This was a really good second option because this came across 100%. It made me literally, my jaw dropped, really. I'm like, they're going to do the whole song. I thought they were just going to do a second of it and then go to Michael Cole, who was terrible last night, by the way. I don't know what the hell is going on with Michael Cole, but he's clearly not paying attention. He was horrendous. He made mistake after mistake after mistake. I don't know what the hell he's doing. This is a guy who on SmackDown, Ricochet is standing in the ring awaiting Braun Strowman to be his opponent. And Michael Cole says, you're looking at the man who's going to go on to face, I can't even think of his name now, from the Liga de Fantasmo in the finals. That's exactly what Michael Cole said on Friday night. And I said, what? What are you talking about? He hasn't even had the match with Braun Strowman yet. And you've already told the fans he's winning. Could not believe it when I heard that. And then last night, he was just terrible again. But, Mike, that opening with Ozzy Osbourne, I thought was one of the coolest things they've done in a long time.
That harkens back to the opening that used to be done with ECW in November to Remember.
Yes.
With November.
Good analogy.
I mean,
yeah.
That, those two openings, chills.
Yep. Absolutely. There's just, you know, the thing about War Pigs is there's, and again, I'm a rock music fan. I'm not a huge, huge Black Sabbath fan. I'm a bigger Ozzy fan than I am Black Sabbath. But man, there's an energy in that song that just screams wrestling theme. And Ozzy, even at his advanced age and with his health problems, putting a lot of energy into the lip singing of it, and you know, they did the lighting right, made him look good. It just worked on all levels, all levels. So congratulations to whoever did that, because that was absolutely brilliant, absolutely brilliant. Okay, so what do we get to next? We get to AJ Styles versus Finn Balor, and we had a little bit of a montage of what ended up happening and why they're going against each other. And they even mentioned the Bullet Club and New Japan and all that stuff. So they went through the litany list of why AJ Styles and Finn Balor sort of are friends and slash possible, you know, rivals. And they made an interesting analogy that while Finn Balor had always said AJ Styles is his friend and that he was responsible for the Bullet Club actually forming, and then AJ took it over. AJ, they said, well, you know what? Yes, you're the one who was responsible to begin with. I made it better. And then I thought, having them say AJ said, I don't recall Finn Balor ever being my friend. I recall him being an acquaintance. But I wouldn't exactly call him a friend. was actually a really good touch because whether he said it or not, and the announcers said that he did, it makes it appear as though AJ Styles always had a little animosity toward Finn Balor and vice versa. Now, this match, I had really thought, because, of course, Damian Priest and Dominic come out and the Good Brothers come out, and I said, okay, well, they're going to wrestle for 8 minutes, and then all hell's going to break loose. And that's going to be the end of the match. They're going to toss it out. I was really happy when they fought back to the dressing room. Because then I said, oh, I don't think anybody's coming back out. I think that was their lot. So we're going to see an ending to this match. And there was plenty of false finishes. There was the finish there where it looked like AJ was distracted, went out to help the Good Brothers, and then got hit. And I said, oh, that's how he's going to lose. But no. Finn trapped in the calf crusher after selling the leg time and time and time again. I said, oh, he's going to tap. He's going to tap and blame it on the bad leg, but no. Then it looked for a second like AJ was going to lose again. There was plenty of good action in this match. But here's the thing I want people to take away from this. AJ Styles is in his mid-40s, and he wrestled a good long match with very few rest holds. Very few. And showed the agility and the timing. He says, well, you know, I can feel like I'm starting to slow down. Well, I don't see it. I don't see it at all. If anything, he's going through this weird sort of Sheamus resurgence where you think, well, he's probably done the best he can. And then you're like, well, I don't know, man. Suddenly it's like second life. Here he is in the ring like he was 25 years old again. Weird how that happens sometimes. But it doesn't happen by accident. It usually happens to athletes who keep themselves in peak condition. And AJ Styles keeps himself in peak condition. I don't know too many guys in their mid to late 40s look like AJ Styles. So, tremendous match back and forth. Finn Balor did a good job, I thought. If there's one criticism that I would give to Finn Balor's performance, it's this. Don't go overboard with your heel rhetoric, because then I know you're going to lose. In other words, it's okay to trash talk AJ. It's okay to say a few things in the ring. But when you go to do the coup de grace and say, it's over now, this is it, AJ, you're finished. I already know he's going to miss because he never says that. He never stalls like that. So when you do that, you're giving away you're going to miss. So don't do it. It robs the fans of the, oh, I thought he was really going to hit it thing. You notice AJ don't do that. When AJ hits the phenomenal forearm, it was just out of nowhere. It's just I didn't think the match was going to be over. And all, I'm like, well, Finn will move because this match has probably got another 4 or 5 minutes. Hell no, he hit him. He hit him and that's it. So Finn has a tendency to try to ham up his heel persona. And when you do that, you're telegraphing that you're not winning. And you're also telegraphing that you're not going to hit the move. So if there's any criticism, it's that. But I'll tell you, I thought this was an awfully good match, Mike. And, both guys, I think, put a lot into it. I think they could probably have another match and really five-star it if they wanted to. They were probably held to time constraints and told not to go too far. But I still think it was a great match overall.
You know what? I mean, we said this about AJ Styles. How can you not have a good match with AJ Styles? How can you not? Especially when you're somebody like Finn Balor who knows AJ Styles. Yeah, Finn smiled, but again, AJ's not that much bigger than him, right?
No, not that much.
You know,
right.
Maybe about 40 pounds, but that's not much, you know. But again, and the right person won.
Yes.
The right person won this match, you know. And that's one of the best spots I've ever seen in this match was the sliding phenomenal forearm that AJ did.
Yes, that was great. And also, I thought what was great is Finn Balor attempting to do the Styles Clash and AJ turning it into a calf crusher. That was good, too. There were several really, really good spots in this match. Several. And Finn did a good job of selling his leg and everything up till him hamming it up and saying, okay, now we're over here, finished, AJ, ha, 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 and taking too long to climb, which made me say he's not hitting it, obviously. Finn did a good job. Did a really good job. The key to a match like this is these guys not only know each other so well, but they trust each other. So they're able to say, look, you know, I'll do this because I know you'll protect me. I'll try this because I know you'll protect me. There's a level of trust there that allows them to maybe go that extra mile and say, you know, we don't have to be super, super careful because if something goes a little awry, I've got somebody to protect me on the other end, which is often overlooked in wrestling matches. You know, you'll say, oh, these guys had a great wrestling match, but they seem tentative at times. That's because they may know the person and say, this person might want to protect me, but he doesn't really know me. He's not going to go to the nth degree. If you're friends like that and you know each other, yeah, you are going to go to the nth degree. And you know that as a performer, so you're like, well, I'll try it. He's not going to let me crash and burn. He's not going to intentionally hurt me. He's not going to do anything that's, you know, would hurt me and vice versa. So that's usually when you have your best matches. And certainly this was a very, very strong match. And if anything, it showed that AJ Styles, who some people had said was slowing down and didn't look like the same AJ Styles, looked like the same AJ Styles to me last night. When you give him the spotlight and tell him you got 15 minutes and you give him somebody to work with, Tom, okay, I still say he's one of the best performers they got in the WWE overall.
Yeah, for sure. I like this match. AJ has not lost a step. I don't know what match he's watching or what matches he's been watching where he said he feels like he's slowed down. I don't see that at all. And I think, you know, we've said this time and time again that AJ Styles can have a good match with a snow shovel, you know, and he'll make it look great. So everything they did in this match was, the timing was what I was really impressed with. And that goes to the fact that they know each other so well. They gave them the time. It wasn't an 8-minute match. The timing was just, no pun intended, but phenomenal, especially on AJ's part. I didn't like the trash talking as he's going up to hit the world's stupidest finishing move ever. But I don't like the trash talking much like you. I thought it was kind of dumb. And you kind of forget that you sell the bad leg the whole match, and then you're climbing up and saying you're finished. Well, wait a minute. I thought you were hurt.
See, that's what I was trying to say about the psychology. It's one thing if you're jumping up to the top rope and your leg's not hurt, and while you're doing it, you're saying, this is it, I've got him, and you're like lightning. Then you say, well, maybe he will hit it. Saying to me, the reason Finn Balor was trash-talking is to try to show the fans, oh, he spent too much time trash-talking and AJ recovered. He should have climbed quicker. Well, you already had an excuse for that, his leg. So don't have him do the trash talking. Just have him start to climb the buckle and realize, oh, man, my leg. You know, and he gets up there, but it takes a little longer. That way the announcers could say, he's having trouble with that leg. It took him a little longer to climb, and that gave AJ just a few extra seconds, and you can't give AJ a few extra seconds. That makes perfect sense. It doesn't make perfect sense that a ring veteran like Finn Balor is going to talk trash rather than just get up on that buckle. So, again, the psychology bothers me. And this is why I'm not a huge Finn Balor fan. I've always said he's a great athlete. But I've also always said he's not really good at the psychology of wrestling. Even the finishing maneuver he picks. I mean, if you hit AJ with your bombs away, yeah, it could finish him off. Is that going to finish off Braun Strowman or Brock Lesnar? Why would it? You're not heavy enough. You're just not heavy enough. That move would not have that same effect on people heavy. and yet we're supposed to pretend it does. Same way with a sling blade. Is that going to take a guy the size of, you know, a Brock Lesnar down? I don't think so. And yet we're supposed to pretend it does. Those are the things about Finn Balor I don't like. I think he needs to have, like, two separate offenses, one for a guy his size or approximately his size, and one for a guy who's clearly way bigger, and he doesn't. Shawn Michaels always did. Watch Shawn Michaels matches against bigger, and he wouldn't do the same moves. He'd wear him down first. He'd try to take the knees out. He'd try to do whatever. He'd try to get him out of breath. He'd run around the ring. He'd do all kinds of things to clearly show, I got to exhaust this guy or I got to take his wheels out because I can't do these moves now. They won't work. He's too big. Shawn Michaels wouldn't stand there and punch to punch with The Undertaker. He'd throw 17 punches. The Undertaker would sell mildly and throw one punch, and Shawn Michaels would go backwards over the top rope and land in a heap on the floor. Because Shawn Michaels was smart enough psychologically to say, that's what would happen if I fought a man this size. Finn has the pit bull syndrome of, I should be just as tough as, you know, Baron Corbin and stand toe-to-toe with him and duke it out. No. Incorrect. That's always a problem. So for the people who wonder why I sometimes get on Finn Balor's case, that's the reason. Anyway, Todd, I thought AJ and Finn did a damn good job in this match. Very entertaining.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, both AJ Styles and Finn Balor did a pretty awesome job last night in their match. Like you said, with AJ Styles, he looks like he's still in good shape. He could still go. And like you said, with the part with Finn Balor trash talking, that's got to stop right there.
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't do it constantly, but when he does do it, it just signals you're missing. He's not the only guy. I hate when everybody does it. I hate when they say, oh, right, he's finished now. And you're like, well, obviously, he's not going to be. I've never heard somebody say, now he's finished, and then they finish him. It's always, oh, I got him now. He's finished. How do you like that? And then they miss. That's it. That's wrestling 101. But that should stop because that's dumb. And it takes away the excitement of, oh, he missed. Because you already know before he does the move, he's going to miss. Anyway, backstage, we get Jey Uso talking to Roman Reigns about what we saw Friday night, which was Kevin Owens telling Sami Zayn that he clearly is going to get turned on eventually. And he should just turn on the bloodline before he gets turned on. Jey overheard it, went to Roman and said not only was he talking to Sami Zayn, but when I asked him who he was talking to, he flat out lied to me and said he wasn't talking to anybody, and that's not true. And Roman Reigns said, okay, well, I'm going to talk to him. I'll handle it. Tells Paul Heyman to call Sami Zayn. This is great. This is a backstage segment during a premium live event, which, and normally they don't mean much, where this means something. Because you don't know now as a fan, well, what's going to go down? That's going to be interesting when he comes face-to-face with Sami Zayn. So I thought that was an awesome backstage piece. We then get to Ronda Rousey and Shotzi. And I got to tell you, folks, this was not good. This was not good at all. Ronda, God bless her to a certain extent. Ronda's trying to sell Shotzi, but they've worked out a really poor match. I'm sorry. They just did. Shotzi's first offense is to knock Ronda into the corner where Ronda falls down and literally just sits there for 40 seconds waiting for Shotzi to do something. Well, how bad could you be hurt? This is the first piece of offense you got in the match. How bad could you be hurt? So this whole match looked like Ronda Rousey clearly on purpose giving Shotzi spots. It didn't look like Shotzi was earning spots, or it didn't look like Shotzi was really winning. It looked like Ronda Rousey was saying, okay, this is where I have to sell you. Through the whole match, that's the only thing I thought of, is this does not feel like a real match. This feels like Ronda Rousey going in saying, I have to sell this spot. and Shotzi not following up on it well enough to make it look like Ronda should have sold the spot. See, that's where you have a problem. Sometimes you have people where they undersell, and you're like, oh, man, you should have sold that. Like Mike was mentioning about how Rhea Ripley sold the Miz. If Rhea Ripley just kind of went, and wiped her eyes and then beat up Asuka, you're like, well, that's dumb. But it's also dumb for Ronda to sit in the corner like someone just literally shot her out of a cannon when nothing happened other than she just hit the corner post, waiting for Shotzi's offense. You could clearly see she's sitting there waiting for it. At one point, I believe it was, it might have been Michael Cole, but I don't think so. I think it was Corey Graves who said, well, the referee's allowing a lot of latitude. Yeah, you think? Shayna Baszler's beating her up on the outside. There's an instant disqualification. Well, the referee's allowing some latitude in this match. Okay. All right. Makes no sense. And through the whole match, I'm saying someone's coming down here. It may not be Raquel Rodriguez if they want to sell that injury. Somebody's coming down. And a little tiny portion of me said it might be Charlotte Flair. But no, nobody came down. Shotzi taps. We knew what the result was going to be. But overall, this was definitely a botch fest. This was definitely a botch fest. And not a good one. And that's a shame because Ronda's grown leaps and bounds as a professional wrestler. And I think if she's in there with a really, really solid opponent, she's good. I mean, if she's in there with a Becky Lynch or a Charlotte Flair or a Bianca Belair or Asuka or somebody like that, she's good. Really good. And she was even really good with Raquel Rodriguez. And she was even good with Liv Morgan. She was not good with Shotzi. It didn't look believable. It looked extraordinarily staged. That's the only way I can put it, is it looked extraordinarily staged to the point where it was almost, like, laughable how staged it looked. So this was the bummer of the night, Mike, as far as I'm concerned. I don't think this helped anybody.
Right. And at worst, what should have happened is we knew what was going to happen, but at worst, what should have happened when – she got involved. If you didn't want to disqualify Ronda Rousey, throw Shayna Baszler out.
Right. Exactly my point. The referee's allowing latitude. Well, okay, but throw her out. She's just blatantly interfered in a match. Okay, you don't want to disqualify him because it's a title match. Throw her out. What right does she have to be at ringside?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Very silly. That's why I'm saying it looked very, very staged. It looked very, very staged. And it's a shame because they're obviously trying to promote Ronda and Shayna Baszler as a team to be reckoned with. I don't know whether they're going to add people to this or they're going to eventually flip one of them and they're going to fight each other. I don't know where that's going. But if they have many more performances like this, it's not going anywhere. Because yes, some of it's Shotzi's fault. The problem with somebody like Shotzi is she's got a good future, and she's got a great look, and she's got a great entrance, and she's entertaining. But she's one of those people that you really need to get, what's the right word for it? She needs to be more confident. Because she always looks like, okay, I'm setting up for the move, now let me make sure I get it right. Instead of just flow naturally. It's got to flow naturally, like you're really in a fight. Because if it doesn't, it's just like I'm setting up for this move. And then I'll set you on the corner, and I'll take my time now, and I'm going to, okay, let me see what I got to do. Here I go to do it. And it looks terrible. It looks so staged. That's why I said if you're going to do it, do it. Like, if you're going to get up on the top rope and jump off, you got to do it. You can't wait to say, now, are they sitting there? Or do they have their arms out to catch me? I don't want to fall. You just got to trust them and say, here I go. Otherwise, don't do it, because it looks terrible otherwise. Not that she did that in the match, but I'm just saying, a lot of her moves, even basic moves, looks like shots he's setting up for it, saying, okay, and now I do this, like she's trying to remember it, rather than just a flow. It's got to flow better than that. If she can't do those type of moves, just make her a brawler. Just make her somebody that punches and kicks and bites and chokes you on the ropes and uppercuts you and, you know, knees you and that kind of stuff. A couple of basic flips and a body slam and an elbow drop, just basic stuff. When she tries to set up for her moves, it just takes too long. And you can clearly see she's tentative. So that's a problem. I think that's a big problem. Tom, this was not a good match.
It was not. It was, I very rarely say that Corey Graves is a better commentator than, or is just as good as Michael Cole on commentary. Last night when Michael Cole was god-awful. I don't know what's up with him lately, but he's been doing that for weeks now. But Corey Graves, the referee is allowing a lot of latitude. Well, that's flat-out cheating. You're getting beat. She's getting beat up outside the ring. What happened to Diesel during the ladder match? He was thrown out. Why didn't the referee throw her out and have her throw a tantrum? That would have been better. To have the commentator say, well, the referee's allowing latitude, that's dumb. Then say nothing, because you just make yourself look like an idiot. The second thing is that I have to agree with you with Shotzi. Shotzi, she's a great entrance. Her look is fantastic, but she's always, like, setting up the move and waiting for the other person to be ready. You just got to go. Yeah, or just looks dumb. And Ronda is last night's match. Ronda, it's almost like Ronda reverted back to her first match, which was awful. Her very first match as a wrestler, which was god awful. A tag match with Kurt Angle. It was just it didn't hold any credibility. Because what do you do with Shotzi now, obviously? I mean, you're going to push her to be, like, this ferocious, like, I'm going to keep coming at you kind of thing, and Ronda doesn't know what to do with that. Or you just, like, she's like Ronda just tosses her around, and somebody comes down. I was wringing my hands because I really thought Charlotte was coming down.
Yeah, me too.
I really thought Charlotte.
The thing about Shotzi is if you're going to promote her as this sort of punk rock princess type thing, she's got to get in there and just play nasty, but she's the face. She's got to get in there and be like, I got brass knucks in my tights, and I'm going to throw you outside and hit you with a chair. I'm going to poke you in the eyes. I'm going to choke you on the ropes. I'm going to bite you. I'm going to knee you. I'm going to, you know, do whatever I got to do. And she's like a wild person, because then you could literally say, well, Ronda Rousey's not used to this. I mean, Ronda Rousey's used to an organized fight where there are rules and certain decorum, and Shotzi don't know what the word decorum is. Shotzi's just ring the bell and try to tear somebody's head off their shoulders. Then I would say, okay, yeah, that's who Shotzi would be. She comes out in a war tank. Okay, and she's supposed to be like this punk rocker, and, you know, she, like I said, she comes out in a war tank, and then she's trying to do, like, moves. Just let her be a brawler. Just let her go nuts. I know you tried to do that with Liv Morgan, and I know you're trying to do that with Nikki Cross, but that's who you hired. You hired Shotzi. Shotzi's got to be that crazy punk rock, you know, slam dance princess that just goes in there and, like, well, she's going to just cause chaos. That's what she does. She's not a refined wrestler. She's not going to do a bunch of moves. She's chaos. And it's very tough to deal with. And it would make sense. Because I remember talking to, which guy was it that I talked to? I'm trying to think if it was, I think it was Shamrock. And I remember it was at a convention, and he said one of the toughest people to deal with in the UFC was Tank Abbott for a while. And he said the reason Tank Abbott was so difficult to work with for UFC fighters is because they were trained, you know, like your opponent's going to do this or they're going to try this, the takedown, this, that, the other thing. The Tank Abbott had, like, no training. He's like a guy fighting you in a bar. He was just coming at you, and you're like, I don't know what the hell he's going to do. He's completely unpredictable. It's just like some dude attacking you in the street. And because of that, you're not trained for that. You're trained to fight a fighter, a trained fighter. And he said he was very tough for a while until people figured out, you know, how to wear him down and just stay away from his wildness for a minute, and then his cardio was gone. He was dangerous because you didn't know at any time you didn't know what the hell he was going to do. He pointed out he tried to throw a guy over the cage, which has never been done in the history of UFC. Yeah, absolutely. Well, that could have been Shotzi and Ronda, where Shotzi could have said, you're not prepared for what's going to happen because you may be a little UFC princess who trains hard and does all of her calisthenics and learns all of the holds and counter holds and spars with women who are paid to make you feel like you're invincible. While you were doing that, I was on the streets fighting. And I doubt you've ever been in a street fight in your life, but you're about to be. And we're going to see if you're the toughest woman on the planet or if you're just a snowflake. Because I suspect you're the latter. I suspect you're a girl who's never been in a real fight. That would have been cool. And Ronda could have sold the, yeah, man, if she's outside the ring throwing me around like this, this is not what I'm used to. I'm out of my element. She's got the advantage. I got to get her back in the ring where I can control things. That would have made sense. Didn't do that, though, Mike. This one was a disaster.
Right. And to your point, look, you know, when Tank Abbott was in WCW, right, and they were building up a match between him and Goldberg. And Goldberg won that match just because of what you said. He knew what to expect, you know, and what should have happened with Shotzi, with this whole thing with Shotzi, is you could have brought in, because both of them were trained by, and to some extent, by Natty. And you could have brought in Natty into this whole thing and said, look, you don't, Ronda, you don't understand Shotzi. She's not going to play like you think, I may have trained you both, but she was the hardest person for me to train because I didn't know what to expect.
Yeah, all you had to do was make Shotzi look like, look, I've been in so many fights in an alleyway somewhere or in a bar somewhere or in a concert somewhere or whatever. I've been in so many brawls. I'm not going to come in there and try to, you know, armbar you. I'm not going to come in there and try to beel slam you. I'm not going to try to come in there and give you some Kimura lock. I'm going to punch you in the face. And then I'm going to do it again and again and again and again. And if that doesn't work, I'm going to hit you in the face with a steel chair. And if that doesn't work, I'm going to put you through a table. And if that doesn't work, I'm going to beat you half to death with a kendo stick. Whatever I have to do, that's what I'm going to do because that's what I'm good at. You may be good at making people tap out. I'm good at making people wish they never fought me. You would have had something. People would have looked forward to it. And then you tell Ronda, look, for the first 5 minutes of this match, you and Shayna got to sell that this girl's out of control. Throw you outside the ring immediately and just start beating your ass, beat Shayna's ass, where they're like, what the fuck is wrong with this girl? She's like, she's a cannonball, going nuts. But then let her throw her back in the ring where she can, then the announcers can say, this is where Ronda needs to, you know, take out her legs and wear her down and keep her on the mat where Ronda's the boss. Then it works. And Shotzi comes off looking like, well, okay, Ronda was able to get her in the ring and make her tap out. Jesus Christ, that girl can fight. I guess that's what you should have done because at least she would have came out of there looking better. The way she came out of this match looking is she's garbage. I'm sorry, but that's the way it looks to me. I never would have booked that match that way, not in a million years, if you wanted to use Shotzi again. And it didn't make Ronda look very good either, by the way. So, Todd, I thought this was easily worst match of the night.
Oh, yeah. Right there. Like you said, with this match last night with Shotzi and Ronda Rousey here, and there was a lot of botches in that match, too. And like you said, with Michael Cole, he's been messing up for the last couple weeks in his commentary as well. Like you said, he was botching in that match as well. And
Michael Cole has been terrible lately. I don't know what the hell is going on with Michael Cole. He's been just terrible. Just terrible. Anyway, we then get the backstage segment again, where Sami Zayn comes in and talks to Roman Reigns. And as you know, I'm not a big fan of Sami Zayn outside the ring. But you can't ask for a better person to play this part. And you cannot deny that Sami Zayn is doing an absolute brilliant job of this part. And what makes this so good is, me as a fan, I'm saying there's no way Sami Zayn is going to be able to lie to Roman Reigns that Roman Reigns is not going to see through this. There's no way. Now, I'm talking about characters now, as if they're real. That's a good sign. That means they got me, right? And I'm saying Sammy's not going to be able to bluff Roman. And if he tries lying to Roman, Roman's going to see through this. And then Sami Zayn gives the best, most logical explanation for what he did I ever heard. And I say to myself, I'd probably fall for that. Where he says, yes, I talked to Kevin Owens. But if I'm honest, it was more like Kevin Owens talking to me. I didn't say much. And what he was saying is, you guys are eventually going to turn on me, and that I should turn on you first. That's what he said. And I listened to him, and he left. And when Jay asked me, he already doesn't like me. And he was going to go out there and do a big match. And the last thing I wanted to do is to put that in his mind when he's going out there for a big match. So, yeah, I withheld that information from him because I thought it was the best thing to do. I didn't withhold it from you. You asked me, I told you. And I said to myself, that's a really good explanation. That actually makes some sense. And Roman Reigns, whoever says Roman Reigns is not a good wrestler, okay, he's not going to give you a 5-star match in the ring. But I got news for you. He's better than you think in the ring, and he's brilliant outside the ring. He gives Sami Zayn the hug, but then the camera closes in on his face, and you clearly see that he has this expression that's kind of like, I don't think I believe him. And it made us as fans say, uh-oh. Uh-oh. Roman's giving the old hug of death. When push comes to shove, they're throwing him to the wolves tonight. That's what it looked like. So hats off to them. Like, they both, in my opinion, both did a brilliant job.
Right. And there's a reason why, you know, a lot of people think that Roman Reigns can be a very good actor, you know, because that look, that when the camera panned into his face, that look, you know, you can say all the words you want. A picture is worth a thousand words, and that look. That picture of that look that Roman Reigns gave that says, I know what you're saying, but I don't believe you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Neither one of those guys could handle that any better. If you're going to grade them on their performance, that's A+. That's A+. Because never for one moment, when I, of all people, find myself thinking of them as their character, and not as, you know, their real person. I'm not sitting there saying, my, isn't Sami Zayn doing an excellent job of acting right now? Oh, isn't it interesting how Roman Reigns' body language is? That's very good. They're doing very well. In the heat of the moment, I'm saying, that's a really good explanation, Sami. Roman should buy that. I think Roman bought that. Oh, maybe Roman didn't buy that. And I'm saying, I'm talking about them in character. It's like talking about Ed O'Neill and saying Al Bundy. You know what I mean? Because you now are so into the characters, Tom, you're not even thinking of them as the real people. You're thinking of them as the character. That's the highest compliment you can pay anybody.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Man, that backstage segment, and you touched on this before, usually backstage segments at a live event really known that are kind of just like filler. This was what I saw in the background as they were talking was Paul Heyman giving not only the look in Roman Reigns' eyes, even before he gave him the hug, Paul Heyman sitting in the background going, this guy is full of crap. And Roman knows he's full of crap, and I can't wait to see what's going to go down. And that swarmy little weasel look on his face, like, look at me, or just sitting in the background, and you didn't even have to say anything. That's what I was like, wow, this is really good. It's just, it was just really good on their part to put this segment in there, and it was so meaningful. And even before the match started, I was like, I don't know what's going to happen. I have no idea what's
going to happen. It really threw you off. It really did. An excellent segment all the way around. Todd, they're doing a fantastic job.
Well, you're absolutely right there, like you said, with this whole thing with the Sami Zayn, the Roman Reigns, and the Bloodline thing. Like you said, they're doing something right in this angle with Sami Zayn and with the book.
They're doing everything right. That's the thing. They're really hitting home runs with a lot of this stuff. The writing is spot on for these guys. So, anyway, we get to the three-way dance, which is Austin Theory, Seth Rollins, and Bobby Lashley for the United States Championship in a triple threat match. I don't think there's anybody much more over than Seth Rollins. I don't know what Seth Rollins could possibly do to get the crowd to boo him because he is just over. And, you know, he got generically over. Like, they didn't try to make him a face. They never did anything, really, with Seth Rollins to try to make him a face. It's just one day the crowd starts singing his song, and they wouldn't boo him. And the WWE said, okay, let's lessen his villainous potential then and make him a little more of a tweener. And then all of a sudden the crowd's just 100% behind him. 100% behind him. Now, this match was an excellent match until the end. Not because Austin Theory won. That was great, because did you see the look on fans' faces? They were going around into the audience, and fans were upset. They like Seth Rollins, and it's clear that they got bigger plans for Seth Rollins. They got some big plans for Seth Rollins. They had to get that belt away from him. They got plans. But the reason this match ending sucked is Bobby Lashley did not spear Seth Rollins. If anything, he gave him a flying clothesline to the midsection. It was a terrible spear, just terrible. And Bobby Lashley should know better than that. Yes, it's a slightly dangerous move, and yes, you got to get out of the way so that Austin Theory can land on top of him. You can't land on top of him. Theory has to land on top of him. But you got to spear him, Bobby. That didn't look like it would hurt anybody. It looked like, well, just the upper part of my forearm came into contact with his midsection. That's not a spear. If anything, it's a weak flying clothesline. And for that to be the end of the match, that was a botch. In my opinion, that's a botch. You got to hit him and then get the fuck out of the way so that Theory can crash down on him. Hit and roll quick. At least give a – I understand you got to be a little to the left or a little to the right. You can't be dead center. I get it. But, man, it's got to be better than that. It's got to be better than that. But nonetheless, the result, I haven't seen looks on fans' faces like that for a long time. It's very clear Austin Theory is not a fan favorite, and the fans are upset. And all I see online is, oh, the wrong guy won that match. Screw Austin Theory. He sucked. Well, congratulations. You're being marked out. That's what they want you to think, and he's doing his job perfectly. Guy's a blue chipper, I'm telling you. This is a guy, young guy now. This is a guy that for a decade can be a WWE superstar, a decade. And this is what we need more of, because unfortunately you got Bobby Lashley, who's almost 50. You got AJ Styles, who's almost 50. You got Roman Reigns, who's, I think, in his early 40s or late 30s. You've got a lot of people who are like in their late 30s or early 40s or even a little older. Time you got some new blood, and this is a guy who's a blue chipper. Great idea to put the belt around him. Great idea. Now let Seth Rollins, clearly is the face in this situation. Clearly is the face. You're going to get some good rematches out of this because those two guys work very well together. You might get another match with Lashley and him. That could be interesting. But at the end, Mike, I think you're going to see they got bigger plans for Seth Rollins, and it may just be Roman Reigns.
That's right, and we speculated on that on Friday. You know that's where this is going to go, and if that's where this is going to go, and he's still going to have to deal with the bloodline, then he's going to need help. So that also tells me that plans for Seth Rollins may include other people.
Could be. It's something to keep our eye on. I don't think it'll happen right immediately, but it's something to keep our eye on for sure. Todd, I thought this was a good match, except you probably saw it yourself. The Bobby Lashley spear was really weak.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, the Bobby Lashley spear last night gave Austin Theory the assist to win the match last night. And like you said, it was one of the coolest, best things I've seen out of this whole thing.
Well, I mean, it was a fun ending, but it was a terrible spear. Just terrible. Tom, it didn't even come close to really being a spear. It's just, I'll hit you with my forearm while I dive at you.
Yeah, and you know, I have to get Bobby Lashley should know better. He's a veteran. He's given that move 100 times. You can give that move to anybody. Don't know how I just don't know how that you botch a spear, honestly. Now, I have to say, and I pat myself a little bit on the back because I did mention this very many weeks ago, that yes, it's one of those homegrown things that they did not want Seth Rollins to be a face, but the crowd just started singing his song throughout the match at some points. It just depends on where they are. And they just sing that match you had with Matt Riddle. They were singing his song throughout the whole match as he was walking on top of the cage.
Yeah.
And he was conducting, which was hilarious because I don't think he even thought it was going to get that far. You could kind of see the look on his face like, I better go with this because this is kind of fun. Now, I said this weeks ago that you're going to – I think he was just a transitional United States champion because they left back at the Royal Rumble where he fought Roman Reigns and he was playing mind games where he came down through the crowd, played the Shield music.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
They left that wide open. They have not said a word about it. And I think that whoever was part of that back then was saving it for some time with, like, let's turn Rollins into a tweener, but the fans just made him a super face. And now is the time, right now, because there's nobody else for Roman Reigns. Now is the time where you collect on that, you know, Royal Rumble thing from last year. That leading it, whether it's leading into WrestleMania, Royal Rumble coming up this year, Fastlane or Roadblock, whatever you want to call it, the one before WrestleMania that they usually have, something.
See, the problem I see, though, with this, and I think you're right, I just think there's a problem with booking, and that is this. You got Cody Rhodes coming back, and he clearly is not going to be happy with Seth Rollins. Where are you going to go with that? Cody can't come back and say, oh, you're a nice guy now? Okay, we're fine. That can't work. On top of that, you've got Sheamus probably set up a little bit for Roman Reigns, and I hear you got The Rock at WrestleMania possible. This is weird. You got too many, and now you've got a little bit of a feud with Austin Theory. There's too many things in Seth Rollins, ahead of Seth Rollins. I don't know where they're going to go with it. you've given him too much. He's technically in a feud with Austin Theory. When Cody Rhodes comes back, that's going to be something. Him and Lashley have unfinished business, and now you might be adding Roman Reigns to the mix. That's a lot. So I don't know. I don't know if that's what they're planning, Mike. It would seem that's what they're planning. But you've got an awful lot of storytelling to do to get around all the rest of this stuff.
Right, and that's the thing. If they were smart about it, they'd go to Cody and say, look, I know you want Seth Rollins, but Seth Rollins is a face, and we want you as a face, but if you really want Seth Rollins, we're gonna have to flip you.
Yeah.
You know.
And that wouldn't be too easy based on his gutty performance. How are you gonna flip him? It's tough because fans are gonna remember, man, you came through with Hell in a Cell with your pec torn right off your bone. It's gonna be so tough. Here's the problem. Seth Rollins, through no fault of his own, just generically became your top face. And you had plans to make him your top heel. And now it's like, well, what do we do? How do we handle the Cody situation? How do we handle this? How do we get him here? I don't know. See, that you got a problem there. If you're a writer, you got a problem. And if the solution is turn Cody Rhodes heel, that's going to be tough. Going to be tough. I guess the real solution would be to have Cody be on a different show, I guess, when he comes back. I don't know. You'd really have to sit down and talk about what you want to do with these guys, because there's too much going on in Seth Rollins' future here that's clouding up the issue. But certainly he's become your top face. Certainly he has. Okay, so we get to the main event. And, man, I'll tell you, this was a damn good match. It was a damn good match. From the very opening to the very end. And, of course, everybody was anticipating. You already knew that the leaders were going to come in last. You already knew that Sheamus and Roman Reigns were going to come in last. But this told a really good story. And when Kevin Owens finally entered the ring and him and Sami Zayn just stared at each other, they never touched each other. Never touched each other. Until the end of this match, where it appeared as though, and again, KO may be being set up for Roman, because it clearly looked like he was going to pin him. Gave him his finisher, which is the stunner, went for the pin, and again, Sami Zayn did not kick off Kevin Owens or physically touch him. He just prevented the referee from counting three. This caused Owens to obviously get upset with Sammy, and they had a little bit of jaw-jacking back and forth. And then when Jimmy Uso went to kick him, Kevin Owens caught the leg, and Sami Zayn, much to many people's surprise, went low on Kevin Owens, causing a big ooh from the crowd, right? Now, we had speculated they might do this. I said Kevin Owens may be out of a spot because Sami Zayn with the Usos is so fire. They don't want to end it. Now, originally that was supposed to be, of course, Kevin Owens sticking up for his friend and Sami Zayn getting shafted by the Bloodline and him and Kevin Owens seeking revenge on the Bloodline, which is a great story. But you don't fix it if it ain't broke. And see, this is where I think Triple H's reign in the WWE might be superior to Vince McMahon's. Vince McMahon was very seldom the guy who called the audible lately. He was like, stick with the plan. Well, they didn't stick with the plan this time. I think Triple H clearly said, look, we're not, this is a golden goose. And we're not killing the golden goose. Let this go. So that means Sammy has to, we have no choice. Sammy has to turn on Kevin Owens, his best friend. And we'll get some good Sammy and Owens matches, I guess, out of it. And we'll get maybe Kevin Owens will come up with some people to try to fight the Bloodline. I don't know. But I do know that very simple things like that, good psychology, is the key to professional wrestling. Not a great super kick. Not a flippity-floppity move. Not a power move. not hitting somebody with a chair. Good, strong storytelling and psychology. Because what got the biggest pop in this match? Was it some insane move that somebody did? Was it somebody being let out of the cage in the anticipation? No. It was Jey Uso hugging Sami Zayn. Is that a wrestling move, folks? See, all of you fans who write to me and say, you don't know what you're talking about. Five-star match is all that counts. It's not about the story. It's not about the story? If it's not about the story, then how come every single thing that went on that night, every move that was done, not one of them got a bigger pop than Jey Uso hugging Sami Zayn? Why is that then? Is that a great wrestling move? I don't think so. That is professional wrestling. Drawing you into a storyline. Making you unsure. Are they going to turn against him? They even did the thing where Jey Uso accidentally super kicked Sami Zayn. And we almost expected Sami Zayn to come back and push on Jey Uso and say, what the hell you think you're doing? And the whole thing to break down. Didn't happen. They led you on a very, very good story. And they led you to think something bad's going to happen tonight, and instead something good happened in the eyes of the fans, because that's what the fans wanted. Can you believe that this is the night that Sami Zayn gets turned on and leading it to the night that Jey Uso breaks the ice with Sami Zayn and accepts him into the family is brilliant storytelling. And that is what professional wrestling is, folks. It's not a great five-star match in Japan between two guys whose names you can't pronounce who just wrestle for 20 minutes and they don't even know each other and there's no story. You may enjoy those matches and that's fine. But this is what professional wrestling's about. Telling this story in an expert way, leading you along chapter by chapter, maybe giving you some false conclusions of what might happen or making you anticipate something that's going to happen, swerving you a little bit, and in the end giving you the end of a chapter that makes you anticipate what comes next. Mike, I don't think they could have done a better job with this. This was easily the big pop of the night was Jey Uso and Sami Zayn embracing.
It was the big pop of the night, but here's the deal. It started out with a bang because, and I put it to you this way, the right two people started out this match.
Yes.
Jey Uso and Butch. I mean, Butch, yes, or Pete Dunne or whatever you want to call him, I mean, he spent the majority of that first 5 minutes working on the hand slash arm of Jey Uso, which you expected him to do, you know?
Yeah.
Especially that whole joint manipulation thing that he does. That was fun. Also, they kind of telegraphed what was going to happen when I believe it was Corey Graves that said that, basically he said that Kevin Owens has a habit of turning on his friends.
Yeah. Well, you know, again, here we have good storytelling. You're not expecting the audience as idiots. Later on at the press conference, which we'll get to in just 1 minute, but later on at the press conference, Paul Heyman made that point and said, well, wait a minute. Before anybody says Sami Zayn turned on his best friend, Kevin Owens was the one who voluntarily went to that team knowing Sami Zayn was on it, knowing that they were going to be opponents. Kevin Owens could have turned that down. So Kevin Owens theoretically turned on his friend, and Kevin Owens has a history of turning on his friends. That's absolutely correct. And everybody who follows wrestling knows that's true. Everybody. So this is actually good storytelling where you're saying, I understand Paul Heyman's perspective, and it's technically correct. What he's saying is technically correct. But two wrongs don't necessarily make a right. So there are going to be some people who say, yeah, but Sami Zayn shouldn't have turned on his friend. He didn't. During this whole match, Kevin Owens never once tried to hit Sami Zayn or do anything. Correct. And Kevin Owens had said prior to this, I've done a lot of bad things in my past, but I'm going to try to put them behind me. He never hid that. Old WWE would be like, okay, well, last month, these two guys fought, and he tried to hit me with a car. He broke into my house and tried to slaughter my family. And now we're tag team partners, and everything's fine because we're both good guys now. Well, that's dumb. That's always been dumb. Because basically you're saying to the fans, you have to forget everything that happened before. That's water under the bridge, forget it. No one would forget that. At least with this angle, you're saying, yeah, well, you know, Kevin Owens has done this too. We can point out the times Kevin Owens has done this. This is not new. And Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens have fought before too. So this is, and as me and Mike speculated last week or a couple weeks ago, you're going to get the honorary Uso thing taken away from Sami Zayn. You just wait. You just wait tomorrow night or Friday night, whichever one they choose to do it. And I guarantee you that they're going to come out with the Sami Uso t-shirts, and they're going to come out with all that stuff. I guarantee you that's happening. It's going to be another bonanza. And that's going to be another big moment. I guarantee you that's happening. So good for them. And there's more to this story, folks. I suspect that there's more to this story, and maybe you still might get a conclusion you're not thinking you're going to get. Just saying. I don't know that for sure. But I suspect this might be a swerve of a swerve, if you know what I mean. So we'll see. We will see. Irregardless, a great match. And Mike's right. Pete Dunne did a fantastic job. Jey Uso always does a fantastic job. Everybody in this match did a fantastic job. Everybody in this match did a great job. There were some really good spots. I thought this was an excellent match. If it wasn't for the story, then I think the women's match would have actually been a little bit better, technically better. But the story drove this, Tom, and that's all that counts.
For sure. I have to agree 100% there. And, you know, again, from just, you know, speaking from experience, not only the psychology and the storytelling, but the timing thing in this match was 100% superb. From the time that, you know, Sami Zayn and Jey Uso were in the ring at the same time, and he was going to help him with the table, and he shoved him. And he was like, I got it, leave me alone, kind of deal, to the Kaluva kick, which looks like it just took Kevin Owens' head off. And
yep.
It was just like, oh, my God. I'm the guy that doesn't like the cool bad guys. I don't really like cool bad guys. I love to hate the bad guys. I want to hate the bad guys. But I'm liking this bloodline thing. And the fans chanting "We feel Usy" was pretty damn funny, actually, because everything in this match was good, from the storytelling, the psychology of the storytelling, and hooked you from Jump Street.
Yeah.
And then at the end of the match, the thing that got the most pop was the hug. And I'm like, well, wait a second.
Because
okay.
You set it up so perfectly. You set that up so perfectly that this was, of course, going to get the biggest pop. And that's what I mean about psychology being more important than wrestling moves. That's what I mean about great storytelling being more important than a wrestling move. It's nice if you have both, which we saw a lot of in that match. But if you're going to say we can only have one or the other, give me the great story, because that's going to work every time. Every time. Fans are never going to get sick of that. And you're absolutely right. But here's the thing about the bloodline. I was thinking about this last night after the press conference. Are they really bad guys? I mean, yes, they occasionally cheat. But at the end of the day, they're saying we're a family. We're looking out for one another. Nobody's backstabbing each other in the bloodline. Roman Reigns is saying, you're an outsider, and I don't know if I should trust you, and my job is to make sure I can trust you before I let you in. I don't necessarily think they're that bad of bad guys. See, that's the thing. They're not super heels. They're not Gunther going around saying all Americans suck and everybody sucks and nobody's a good – they're not that. They're – there's a gray area there with them, a big gray area with them, where you say, well, what actually are they doing wrong? What actually are they doing that you say that is totally effed up? Not anymore. They were for a little while, but now they've greatly undermined that because I think they know they're popular. So I'm not sure that they're super heels. They're sort of a gray area group that it depends on your perspective. That's why I think it's going to be hard for Kevin Owens, because poor Kevin Owens, who gets turned on last night, he's not going to be a big face because of this. If he fights Sami Zayn, I have a feeling the crowd, Todd, may potentially root for Sami Zayn.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, if the crowd roots for Sami Zayn, he's going to be the underdog here, and for him as the underdog, mostly.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if the crowd's going to do that. And Mike, that's why I'm saying there may be more to this story. I have no inside information. I'm just going by my spidey senses, so to speak. But what would happen if Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn formulated that plan to make it look like Sami Zayn is 100% trustworthy, 100% Uso through and through, so they could now divide and conquer? I mean, that is possible, and then it would make them major heels against the Usos, and it would probably flip the bloodline faces, I would assume.
Right. Again, it would probably also lead to them at some point adding Naomi. But here's something else to think about. We know how stiff a guy Sheamus is. And we know that at some point we're going to get Sheamus versus Roman Reigns, right? But the one I really want to see, and I think would be a good matchup for Sheamus, is Sheamus and Solo.
Yeah. And I think you'll see that, too. I think you're going to see that. And you're right. I might want to see Sheamus versus Solo more than Roman Reigns, because I know Sheamus is not winning the title. He may beat Solo. Sheamus has had such a resurgence in his career. It's unbelievable. And he's done it by just being a tough son of a bitch. See, that's the thing. I mean, Sheamus came back, and people are like, oh, it's Sheamus again. And then he's in these matches with Drew McIntyre, and he's in these matches with Gunther, where you're like, Jesus Christ, man. I mean, yeah, it's still predetermined, but they're really slugging it out here. They're not kidding. And I think he just earned so much respect because people knew he's not 100%. He's still doing this. He's still doing it. Do you know how hard it is to have Solo Sikoa on your back and climb the goddamn turnbuckle? Try that sometime. Pick up somebody approximately your weight and then just try to go upstairs with them. And upstairs is easier than climbing on a turnbuckle, because that moves, the ropes move as you're, that's an incredible strength that Sheamus has. That's incredible, really. That's something. So, yeah, I mean, fans see that and they're respecting it. Sheamus has earned a lot of respect from the fans in this last go around. Let's get to the press conference, because they got to do away with these. Number one, they look phony and cheesy and horrible and terrible. They say, well, we got an internet question. It's always from the same guy, some Pro Wrestling Illustrated or Sports Illustrated or some shill thing. This is worse than Joe Biden calling on people. I got a list of people to call on. Well, that's what this is, basically. And then you got some guy standing up like he didn't know he was going to be called on, saying, yes, I'm from such and such, and I have a question. Yeah, I'm sure you do. None of this looked real. It doesn't feel real. And what's worse, it puts the wrestlers in a bad situation, because they're asking Sami Zayn questions, and he's got to be kind of careful to, like, somewhat not break kayfabe, but at the same time not look like a total idiot. So he's like, waffling between saying, well, you know, it was more than just good acting, because there's real emotion there. You know, Kevin Owens and I have been friends forever, and you can't talk about his career without talking about me, and you can't talk about my career without talking about him. So there's honest emotion going on in that ring. That's not just me acting. And you're like, it's walking such a thin line. I don't think it's worth it. I don't think it's worth it. All it does is semi-expose the business. I just, and no one's asking any poignant questions. I mean, if there was a point to this press conference, it was better when Triple H came out because then he could just answer questions about, are you going to be expanding into different countries, and what do you think about your pay-per-view lineups? Are you ever going to go back to the original Survivor Series elimination things? And questions that, okay, I would like answers to those too. But to actually have the people up there add a character, so to speak, and try to work that thin line between staying kayfabe and shooting, it's not working for me. I didn't like it. I don't know if you've seen any of it, Mike, but it was uncomfortable.
I didn't see any of it, but I would say if I saw it, I'd probably feel uncomfortable as well. But there's one little thing about the match that I want to say that kind of ran my spidey senses up as well, and it was when he hit him with the Haluva kick, and boy, did he sell that thing, as Kevin Owens did.
Yes.
And I would say it helped kind of resurge the Haluva kick, but he sold it to the point of, well, you look, as you were watching Sami Zayn debating on whether or not he was going to cover him, you know, he could have covered him and got the 1-2-3, but we know what eventually ended up happening there. But
right.
He could have covered him and got the 1-2-3 because that's how well Owens sold the Haluva kick.
And to your point, this is why I was so upset when Johnny Knoxville didn't. See, this is what I'm trying to say to people, and they act like, you know, I'm crazy. Oh, that was a very entertaining match, and I laughed, and I thought, yeah, I know. But if a 50-some-odd-year-old dude who weighs 140 pounds soaking wet doesn't even sell that kick, and then you got to expect Kevin Owens to sell it like lights out, that's it for me. Watch Johnny Knoxville Superman? See, that's the problem. And I don't forget that, and fans don't forget that. Never, ever, ever undermine your guys for some stupid celebrity. It's one thing if it's a guy like Logan Paul who really wants to be a wrestler. And by the way, they said he's out for like 6 weeks. He may make WrestleMania, but they're not sure. But it's different if it's Logan Paul. It's even different if it was, you know, Bad Bunny. Because Bad Bunny, for all that he did, he at least looked like he was taking it serious. And when bigger guys got in, it was clear he's not holding his own. And he's selling everything that they did. But when a guy like Johnny Knoxville basically no-sells the Haluva kick, like, oh, yeah, okay, that's supposed to hurt. Yeah, it is, Johnny, it is. And how about you just never give it to him if that's not the end of the match or he don't know how to sell it? Or how about if you explain to him, when you're hit with this dude, that's it, lights out, you got to sell it. It does hurt, and fans do remember. That's why I'm against these one-time guys making wrestlers look bad. Always was against it, and I always will be against it. And again, I'm not saying Logan Paul. I'm not saying Bad Bunny. I'm not even saying some guy who's supposed to be a real ass-kicker. I mean, if you had somebody in there like, I don't know, Jean-Claude Van Damme or somebody, I get it, Johnny Knoxville. So anyway, the press conference was... it was weird. Like I said, Sami Zayn was alluding to the fact that some of what we're doing is acting, but it's more than acting because there's really motion involved. And Paul Heyman was trying to kind of stay in kayfabe, saying, well, you know, Kevin Owens turns on his friends, and he technically turned on Sami Zayn because he didn't have to accept this match. He knew Sami was going to be in this match, and yet he clearly added his name to their team, knowing that they were going to have to go into combat. And he said, like in UFC, these people have fights, and then, you know, they know they're going to fight each other, and then, you know, you can still be friends. But, you know, when you're in that cage, it is what it is. So there's that little walk on the line. And they had Bianca Belair and Becky Lynch come out, and they asked Becky Lynch, and she totally broke kayfabe. They asked Becky Lynch about, were you nervous climbing up to do that spot? And she said, yes, I actually was. She said, they said, oh, you didn't look like you were nervous. She said, I was shaken because I practiced it. I practiced it, But, you know, in the heat of battle, it's different. And you're saying to yourself, oh, God, I've just come off injury and here I am doing this. And just totally, basically broke kayfabe and literally said she practiced the move. I don't know how that helps wrestling, Mike.
I don't know how it helps it either. But, I mean, I get, you know, I get where she's coming from, you know, when she says that, because she, you know, it is what it is with that. I get it. I get that. Now, as far as, I mean, you mentioned, you talked about earlier about the, even guys like Stephen Amell got it. You know?
Yeah, he was okay. Yeah, guys like that's okay. I mean, if you're going to bring in some dude and he's a big, friggin' monstrous dude, if you're going to bring in some football player that weighs 300 pounds and he's going to go against, you know, Finn Balor or something, okay, I could see him doing okay for a while because that's a big mountain to climb, right? And they're athletic and they're strong. But when you're just bringing in, you know, what are you going to do next? You're going to bring in, you know, some comedian? Well, let me bring in this guy. And he weighs 140, and he'll give Braun Strowman hell. Why? Why would he give Braun Strowman hell? The Gypsy King guy, I get him. He's a big dude, and I'm sure he can knock you out. I'm damn sure he can knock you out. So I get that. But I don't get Johnny Knoxville, especially if he's not going to sell. I mean, the story of that match, and I don't want to go into that match too much, but the story of that match should have been Johnny Knoxville is getting his ass handed to him completely, as in not getting in a punch. And Sami Zayn is just making a fool out of him. And then all of his compadres distract Sami Zayn, and that's the difference in the match. Not, oh, I'm no-selling your moves, and I'm actually staying right with you. Really? Well, then you're not a very tough guy then, Sami. See, that's the problem. The weakest pro wrestler that you have on your roster currently, the guy who gets his ass handed to him every single week, should be able to turn Johnny Knoxville inside out at will, let alone lose to him. So that's where I have a problem. But Sami Zayn did an excellent job of rehabbing his career. This whole thing has been just, they struck gold accidentally. The WWE oftentimes does that, folks. Remember, Becky Lynch's whole entire run was an accident. She was supposed to be a heel. And her whole entire run as the man became accidental. It was just an accident. Pairing up Orton and Matt Riddle, accidental. Orton was supposed to go into a program with Braun Strowman, didn't want to do it. Braun Strowman ended up getting fired anyway, and they said, okay, we'll do the thing with Riddle. We'll see how it goes. Accident. Sami Zayn with a short little stint he was supposed to do with the Bloodline. Accident. Oftentimes, the best stuff is generic, and they just say, well, we'll do this for a week. And you say, oh, well, no, look, this is taking off. But you got to be ready to call an audible then and say, okay, well, then just keep it going. That's what they did last night. I'm sure the writers are busy with more conclusions of how to keep this going for a while. Probably up until WrestleMania at this point. So aside from that one bummer match, and that was a bummer, this pay-per-view was pretty sharp. Pretty sharp. And I'm not going to let one bummer match destroy the rating. I'm not going to ignore it either, though. Because there was no reason to have that bummer match. You could have done much more with that. I'm going to give this pay-per-view I'm going to give it an A-, and it would have been an A-plus if you had a better match with Shotzi and Ronda, Mike.
I got to agree with you with that thing. Everything they did except for that one match, yeah, there were botches here and there, all that stuff, and stuff, misses and things of that nature, but I'm willing because of the whole Bloodline storyline and everything else, and the quality of that first women's match, of the women's war games match, you know, I gotta say, it's gotta be an A- for me as well. And this is what, the second or maybe the third pay-per-view we've given such of the WWE's we've given high marks to?
Yeah, the pay-per-views are really starting to excel, and they're starting to become, there's a feel to them. You know, you rightfully and brilliantly compared it to some ECW stuff, because that's, you're exactly correct. Remember when ECW was so cool because of the way they just presented it with the music and the interviews and the whole pop culture thing, and it was just so cool. Everything was like, that's just cool. When it was at it, that's what the WWE's starting to feel like now. Last night felt like that a lot, where you're just like, this is just cool. From start to finish, this is cool. Okay, you had a bummer match, but this is still cool. You're going to have a bummer match once in a while. There's no federation that's going to give you five-star matches through the whole card, no mistakes, no duds. That's, you know, that's dreamland. But this just had a cool feel to it that reminded me of that old school, not so much in the way they fought in ECW, but the way they presented in ECW, Todd.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, it reminds me of that, like you just said. You know, it's one of those, the pay-per-view was okay, but like you said, it reminds me of the old ECW, when they had the montages and everything, you know, the closing of the show. They're doing like the up close back and forth thing with the,
yeah,
close,
just a cool presentation.
That
makes it just feel cool. What's your rating?
I'm going to give it an A-.
Yeah, me too. And Mike, you were spot on when you said that. It's starting to feel like they are presenting this in a way that is no longer just like stale, typical professional wrestling, but more pop culture thing presentation that makes it just seem more fun.
Kind of makes you wonder if Triple H has been talking a little bit to Paul Heyman about,
yeah, it does
some
make
of this
you
stuff.
Wonder. Yeah, it really does make you wonder that, because I see a little bit of that now that you mentioned it. I see a little bit of that, because the very first segment with Ozzy Osbourne and stuff, I'm like, this has really ramped me up to watch this. And then the women's match was just like, yeah, the adrenaline, you know. And before you know it, you're like, I'm hooked. And the only thing that brought me down was the Ronda Rousey Shotzi match, and then it was brought right back up. So it wasn't that egregiously horrible, because there was still so much going on. So, yeah, I mean, listen, if they can continue to present these pay-per-views like this, where it feels more like a complete package that's presented in a really cool manner, man, that's just going to be icing on the cake, and that just makes the pay-per-view seem that much better. There is one thing we wanted to mention before we go, and that is we found out an interesting piece of information, and that is apparently Edge, Kevin Nash, and a couple of other people have been giving Baron Corbin really high praise, saying if you've been in the ring with Baron Corbin, this is a guy who looks like he's literally destroying you, and he's the safest guy we've ever been in the ring with. Edge said, during his match with Corbin, he felt extremely protected. There's pictures online you can see of people posting how Corbin gave him certain moves and like overly protected him while it looked really good. And he's receiving very, very high praise. A lot of people are saying he's not getting the praise he deserves, and that a ton of people within WWE is saying he's among the safest guys to be in that ring with. That sounds, Mike, even despite what happened on Monday night, sounds like maybe Corbin might be getting himself a push eventually.
Yes, and that's the thing. And it looked bad when they did what they did with the comedy with Tozawa. But which, by the way, Tozawa would destroy Johnny Knoxville, and they're about the same size.
Right.
But that's neither here nor there. But if they're going to be able to rehab this whole thing with him, and it's going to be interesting if they're going to be able to rehab this whole thing with him and JBL.
It will be. I will tell you this. The highest praise you can possibly get from your coworkers, if you're a professional wrestler, isn't that, yeah, he's a great entertainer, or yeah, he's an awesome wrestler. Those are nice things to hear. But the highest praise you possibly can get is when someone says, safest guy I've ever been in the ring with. Totally safe to work with, totally confident in his ability to protect me. That's the highest praise you can get from your coworkers. And if that doesn't transfer into a somewhat of a push, and people saying, you know, he's never really gotten his fair shake, at some point someone's going to reward him for that. At some point that's going to happen. I don't know when, but I just know that that's the highest praise you can get. And it sounds like they're intentionally coming out and saying this to try to get Triple H and company to say, all right, if you guys are so big on him, I guess we can give him a bigger spot or something. Because why pick this time? Why pick this time for everybody to come out of the woodwork and say how safe he is and how great he is to work with? Just seems odd. So we'll see what happens with him. Anyway, a very good pay-per-view, folks. I hope you enjoyed it. And we'll be back here on Tuesday with a Monday Night Raw report.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio.